Okay, so I'll be talking about barcoding the bees of the world. We had an inaugural meeting of a group of taxonomists to start this earlier on this year at York University. So as we know, bees are in trouble. Which one do I press? Left click to go down?
Up or down.
Okay. One of the reasons bees are in trouble is that most people think they know what they are. Chris O'Toole and Anthony Raw do know what bees are, but the publishers obviously thought they did, but didn't. One of the reasons for this, of course, is that they're actually pretty difficult to identify. To know that something's a bee, you've got to find branched hairs on the body somewhere. Many bees are almost bald. Most bees have got lots of unbranched hairs, and there are a few mutilids that are really annoying and have got branched hairs also. So this causes trouble, and even I, if I saw that on a flower, would at first assume it was a wasp. But as I collect those also, I would eventually find out that it was a bee. Okay, so there's 20,000 or so described species of bees in 7 families. This gives us plenty of room for error and plenty of room for interest. The taxonomic impediment is enormous. And I'll be looking at some of the problem species in a little while. But this also applies to ones that are economically important. Here we see a stingless beekeeper and his colonies in Kakamega Forest in Kenya. And over on the top right there are a couple of colonies where the taxonomists tell him it's the same species, but he's convinced there's more than one there because they behave differently. We haven't barcoded them yet. Okay, so what is barcoding? Well, I've already talked about the campaign. I'm going to give you some examples, and then I'm going to deal with some of the criticisms of this. Okay, so mitochondrial DNA, small portion of CoOne, universal primers. It's all very easy. Here's the man that invented the technique, and we can see him on the left generating data. He then scans the Lego into the fancy audio visuals and comes up with all sorts of misleading results that way. So we start off then with 96 wells per plot, and well, it's not a hierarchy of primer decisions. This slide is from a pilot study where we were actually using, or Alex Smith was actually testing a whole bunch of things. But basically, this stuff's done by robot, plus a few students and technicians, and you end up with a nice little neighbor joining tree, and I know they're bad, but that's what you end up with, at least at first glance. And per sequence is costing about $7. Okay, so some examples of how this actually works. So first of all, Corey Sheffield has barcoded just about all of the bee species in Nova Scotia, Canada. And as we can see here, they all come out really very nicely, apart from one situation where they come out really nicely, but we don't know what they are. We don't know what they are because they're morphologically identical. And yet, there's a 12% sequence difference between them. As everybody knows, doing a regional survey is like picking the low-hanging fruit. What we really want to do is to choose something meaty, and Dialectus is one of the meatiest taxonomic problems that you can think of in North American bees. That's because there's 288 species names for bees that look exactly like that between where I live and the US-Mexican border. 288 species names, that is the same individual photographed many times, but it wouldn't make much difference if they were all different species, because they all look the same. So I'm going to go through the kinds of results that we get. 70% of instances we get something like this. Is there a pointer?
Just the mouse.
Oh, this is fancy, eh? Okay. Oh, nice. All right. So 70% of the time, DNA and morphology agree perfectly, and we get nice separation between the species. Heterognathum, Zephyrum. Here we've got Levisimum. Nice thing here, Levisimum. It's the same animal from Utah, you know where that is, New Brunswick, that's eastern Canada, Maryland, North Carolina, British Columbia. So continent-wide, the sequences are pretty much identical. Then we get the cryptic species or erroneously synonymized species problem. Here we've got two species which were originally described as separate and then synonymized, so the synonymy was an error. The sequence divergence between these is quite substantial, but we also, as I mentioned, get cryptic species situations. Those are well known. It enables us to associate the sexes of these little bees. So here, for example, Dysporilli, the male was previously known as Brassicae, and in Cyanionodum, the male previously was unknown, so we now know what those look like. And then 3% of the time we get this awful situation where, my goodness, the traditional morphologists can tell them apart, but the DNA sequences are the same. We're not quite sure what's going on here, although we wouldn't always expect DNA barcoding to be able to tell species apart. Neither would we always expect morphologists to be able to tell them apart. Nonetheless, these bees are social. Here we see the largest example of caste differences in any halictine. So that's a queen with a worker. And I calculated that it takes perhaps one foraging trip for the queen to produce a single worker. That's pretty efficient shopping, isn't it? So this is an extreme example of caste differentiation in a different genus, but we do get queens and workers in Dialectus, and perhaps some of these things where morphologically we can tell them apart, it's an example of caste differences. We haven't looked into that in detail, though we plan to. Okay, as we all know, but you know, there are some people that don't like barcoding. So there's a whole bunch of reasons that people have aimed at this marvelous new method. The one that I will agree with is that the way we analyze the data at first glance is phonetic. And that's not such a good thing, but it's fairly trivial to get over that. Barcode gaps and species concepts, it makes mistakes, takes funding from traditional taxonomy, and my favorite is that it's damaging to children. So this is from the an image from the article that claimed that, and one can easily imagine, you know, this budding young taxonomist having a conversation with their parent that goes along these lines: "What's this, Daddy?" "It's a butterfly." "What kind of butterfly is it, Daddy?" "It's a swallowtail butterfly." "But Daddy, what kind of swallowtail butterfly is it?" "Well, there are two ways of finding out the answer to that. We could remove a small piece of its antenna and put it in your iPod and then pay a couple of dollars and find out what it is. Or we could rip out its genitalia, look at them under a microscope and compare them to a whole bunch of drawings." Which of those two things is going to be most damaging to a young child? Okay, so the idea that barcoding doesn't have a species concept, this has been the most extremely put forward by Fitzhugh. We should stop doing barcoding until everybody agrees on a species concept. Well, let's apply that to morphology. How many species concepts can dance around the head of an entomological pin? 250 years of species, there's almost that many different species concepts for morphologists to deal with. Why not apply the same kind of criticism to that? Identification accuracy is low. Well, for the most difficult group of bees that I know of, we get 97% accuracy at the species level. You get 10 to 15% species inaccuracy at the level of genus for freshwater benthic invertebrates. If there's any honest morphology-based taxonomist out there, how many misidentified specimens have you got in your collections? 3%? I suspect probably a lot more than that. Give you an example of this kind of problem that DNA barcoding and other genetic methods can solve. One of North America's easiest bees to identify. Just look at that broad gena there. Broadhead, broad gena. If it's a halictine with those characteristics, you know it's this one. Well, at least you did until the mid-1990s, where we found out that these are two extremely genetically well-differentiated species, with using allozymes, if anybody in the audience is old enough to remember them, a 25% genetic distance between the ones in the southeastern USA and everywhere else in North America. And where you see these black and white diamonds here, you get both species flying around in a in fields the size of this room. Collect them on the same flowers. The bees can tell them apart. We can't. With this species, the morphological gap is zero. Morphometrics on the male genitalia is zero. The barcode gap is 3.8%. And there's a 25% 25% of the loci we looked at for nuclear genes had fixed differences. Okay, the idea that barcoding takes money away from traditional taxonomy, I have no idea whether this is going on in the US because I don't pay any attention to what goes on in the US. Although I gather you had an election recently. I have analyzed the data for funding from our equivalent of NSF, and this is the data that I managed to extract from the government's literature. And this looks as if standard taxonomy would have died out by the, you know, towards the end of this century. Catastrophic decline. When we add in funding that from the barcoding enterprise that goes to people that do taxonomy, we can see that it's a much healthier situation and over a 50% increase in the amount of money available to us. And that's the, as far as I'm concerned, DNA barcoding has made a renaissance of taxonomy possible in Canada because it was going the way of the dodo until this large injection of funds came around. Okay, so the problems with it, phonetic model mode of analysis, that is a problem, it's trivial to fix. Species concepts, there should really be an exclamation mark there rather than a question mark. It makes mistakes, it's far more accurate than most morphologists are. You know, to identify a bee to the level of family, you've got to dissect the mouth parts, goddammit. You know, who wants to learn taxonomy doing that? I do, I like it. I like doing morphology-based taxonomy, but I wouldn't stop somebody from doing DNA-based taxonomy. But some people don't like that. So it takes funding from traditional taxonomy, well, at least not in Canada, and it's damaging to children? I don't think so. An awful lot of organizations have helped this. They're listed there. There's an awful lot of people that have helped me get specimens, and I thank them, especially the people that work with me for their patience with me. Thank you. Oh, come on. There's got to be somebody that disagrees with me. Yeah?
I don't disagree, but one of the great insights of the barcode, you know, Dialectus, why is it so shallow? Why did it move with humans? Or why are there so many 10 worldwide species?
Well, that's just North American ones. If you include them worldwide, I'd have a difficulty guessing, and there are actually problems with how you define it when you get outside of North America, but I wouldn't be surprised if worldwide. Once we've done the barcoding of them all, we might end up with 500, 600, 700, 800. Why there are so many? You buy Mary Jane West Eberhard's argument that evolution of sociality involves increasing complexity and therefore a greater rate of speciation. They've got all the types of social behavior, known on the planet, except for the one that the honeybees got with perennial colonies. There is a species that's got perennial colonies, but the females don't live long enough to have that kind of social organization. There's a, you know, in the, I'm going to talk about these bees a bit because I like them. So the next subgenus along, there's a species there where queens live twice as long as your average honeybee queen. Yeah.
So what went wrong then with the Myra et al. Study where they looked at the C1 data from 250 bee species or whatever it was from Gen Mag, and no matter how they analyzed the data, about the best they could do was 70%.
Yeah, anybody
so
that...
What was the problem?
Yeah, well, they admitted in their paper that identification errors in the data that go into GenBank are well known. There was a Braconid sequence in there that was a cow. And even a more, you know, even your average DNA-based taxonomist can tell those two apart. So a lot of that's based upon misidentifications. And in GenBank, at least when they did their study with those data, you couldn't trace back to the original specimen and compare it. With the DNA barcoding effort based at Guelph, the Biodiversity Institute of Ontario, every record, with the exception of the things that are just so small you have to grind it up, to the whole thing up, you get the specimen. We just take one leg off of these bees, and the rest of the specimen is sitting around in a collection, and it's all databased, and if somebody thinks you've made a mistake, you'll be able to find the specimen and send it back to them. So the problem with that study, and Meyer is now doing some DNA barcoding, his latest paper actually kind of advocates it in a really rather weak way, because the sample sizes were so small it wasn't really worth worrying about. So misidentifications.
You're saying there's a 30% misidentification rate
in the data that they had. I'm not a dipterist, so I can't say how good the data that went into GenBank are, but that's the argument. In all of the groups that people have looked at where they've got the specimen to go back to when there are errors, we find that we get a 97, 98 or more percent accuracy of identification with bees, with birds, with fish.
I have a question. Yeah. So I've heard this argument before that, well, this criticism before that the methods of analysis are phonetic and that's bad. And I wonder if you can explain why in this situation it's why we need to analyze these data in any other way.
Any other way than phonetic? Well, I guess the issue there is if you've got a situation where you're trying to find out whether, you know, the ultimate goal here is to be able to enable anybody on the planet to identify anything using their iPod, right? So that's the you know, Dan Jansen, you know, every time he gives a talk, he takes his comb out of his back pocket and says, I want something this small that will enable me to identify something. And everybody who's heard that talk multiple times is looking forward to the day when he's completely bald. So the problem could arise where somebody sends in a sequence and it's, you know, for phonetic reasons, it comes out and you identify it as one thing. But if you did a cladistic analysis, it could be the sister text, you know, the sister sequence to the ones that you've got in the setup. I have no idea the probability of that occurring, and I think it would be well worth somebody's time to actually do analyses of real data to test that. I suspect it probably isn't a big problem, but nonetheless, you know, we're all card-carrying members of the Willie Hennig Society, and we don't like seeing neighbor joining trees. Yeah.
You diagnose a species with a barcode that you can't distinguish morphologically from anything else nearby in your neighbor joining tree. What kind of description do you write for a species like that?
We photocopy the one from the previous one. That was diagnosed based upon Alzheimer's nuclear genes, but it's the same situation. I think people have known for a long time now that there are taxa out there that you cannot differentiate using standard morphological approaches. You know, using just molecular data to diagnose a species is problematic. I'm not sure how to go about doing that. We've not actually come up to the situation where we want to submit an article that says this species is morphologically indistinguishable from that. Here's the type specimen. Like we're getting close to that. These decisions are going to have to be made. And there's all sorts of other practical problems associated with this kind of thing. You know, Alex Smith's stuff shows that there's an order of magnitude more species of braconids attacking Lepidoptera in Costa Rica. And, you know, it's going to be a century before all of these are described, but yet they're going to be separable using a simple barcode. What do you call them? Right? This discussion is something that the community has to have. You know, I don't know what the answer is going to be, but, and we're not likely to agree.